Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you. Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
Are high prices beginning to cure high prices? We'll discuss that and more today on Commodity Week. Welcome to the August 3rd edition of Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey. Later this half hour, we'll talk with Al Kleiss, president and managing partner of Kleiss Commodities in Wayzata, Minnesota. Our panelists today are Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing in Morton, Illinois, and Greg Johnson of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Let's open today's discussion with this question. Is it possible that we will soon be seeing bullish weather fatigue from traders and they'll want to either see a significant yield reduction or ending stocks reduction on USDA reports this coming Friday or harvest numbers before moving the September corn futures out of what has become a range-bound trade? Chip Nellinger.
Yeah, I think that could very well be the case. The market seemed a little bit tired this past week, a little bit of rain around in some areas. So that report coming up this coming Friday on the 10th really could set the tone for further increases up into contract highs and maybe a test of that 8.25, 8.5 zone in corn and somewhere north of 17 in beans. I think more important than the yield number, though, is going to be what the USDA does with harvested acreage. So it could be on hold, choppy trade next week ahead of that report.
Taking those ending stocks into account, but putting them aside for a moment, Greg Johnson, FC Stone this past week put the national corn yield at 124, soybeans 36.2. In your mind, does that represent the current worst-case scenario among traders? And if those numbers are realized, does it push futures beyond the 821 December and 1691 November beans? Why or why not?
I think there's been a lot of crop tours that have been going on, and people realize the corn crop has been hurt. Is it 124? Is it 120? Is it a little bit worse than that? We don't know for sure, but it's certainly bad. And as Chip said, the harvested acreage number could come down as well. So when you combine lower yield and lower acres, I think there still is some room to go up for the corn, especially if you consider that some of these same traders that have talked about how the corn crop is hurt, they kind of acknowledge that. They're still really holding out hope for beans, saying that if we could get one rain here in the next week or so, maybe we could still pull a rabbit out of our hat and have something close to a normal crop of beans. So if that doesn't happen, I think that the bean market still has a lot of room to go up yet.
Greg, let me stay with you. How likely is it that end users come to the futures market at these record high futures in the short run and then in the medium term?
I think the end users just want to go hand to mouth. I mean, you don't want to buy more 850 corn than you have to. But yet, I don't think there is very much coverage there, so they are going to have to continue to buy.
Dan Zwicker, what are the technical roadmaps trying to signal us about corn and soybean direction for the August-September timeframe?
Well, I think Friday's report in response to Informa Economics crop estimates pretty well dressed up the charts to the point where I think all of the longer-term upside objectives now are back on track in a way for the market to kind of reach up and attain. The first one, I think, is the the measuring gaps that we left back that 4th of July weekend or right after 4th of July weekend. Those are, I think, the logical targets. That kind of takes these corn up into the 850 area, and then, you know, then we kind of go from there. Soybeans, I think in the short run, we're kind of looking at a measuring gap, something in that 17 and a quarter area, but larger numbers can be read out of the chart. I think, you know, for the most part, I think the end user crowd is hoping and praying that maybe the government will get involved, do something, waiving the mandate, and or restricting exports. I mean, you have, you know, the chief executive of Bunge Corporation, the chief executive of Cargill Company, out basically lobbying Congress as well as the livestock industry to do something with the ethanol mandate. So definitely there's political pressures to ease up on some things. So I think a lot of the end users are staying hand-to-mouth and hoping and praying that there's government interference to maybe knock these commodity prices down. But my guess is that the market's going to go a whole bunch higher, and it's going to exert a lot of pain on the end user yet before it's over with.
Here are the week's settlements. Chicago wheat, the September variety, 919 and three quarters the high, the low 856 settlement at 891 and a quarter, down 6 3/4 from last week. July wheat settling at 848 and a quarter, up 18 from a week ago. September corn at a high of 825, a low of 782 and a quarter. Settlement at 810, up 11 and a half from last week. December corn settled at 807 and a half, up 14 and a quarter from last week. Soybeans for August, the high there 1742, the low 1635 and three quarters. August soybeans settling at 1656 and a quarter, down 28 from last week. November beans 1628 and three quarters, up 27 from a week ago. August live cattle, the high at 121, the low 118.45, settlement 119.97 and a half, up 37 and a half from last week. And feeders at 138.95 were up 120 from a week ago. A question for all of you. Are high prices beginning to cure high prices? Exports this past week on new crop corn was just 900,000 bushels. For soybeans, 1.9 million bushels. Are we seeing signs of demand destruction?
Yes. Yes, we are. I would counter that, though, with we're also seeing supply destruction, too. And so it's a question of which one's dropping faster. And it still feels like there's still some more room to go down on the supply side, maybe before the funds and the end users capitulate.
Chip, which one is dropping faster?
I think in case of corn, I agree. Definitely starting to see that decrease in the demand side of the equation. Exports really off where we should be for now, and $8 corn is going to do that. Less evidence in the beans, however, that we're starting to slow demand down. And that's scarier because until South America gets back online this coming winter and early spring, there's just no other source of beans in the world other than here.
And Dan, supply and demand, and a corollary to that, the likelihood that the August crop production report and WASDE reports will feed the bull.
Well, no, I think they'll feed the bull to a certain extent, but I guess I question whether or not they'll come down as low as what we saw FC Stone and Informa Economics come down. You know, the corn, I guess, I think they would probably be laughed out of Washington if they didn't bring the corn yield, you know, down to something like 130, give or take a bushel or two. I think they could do that, but that would be much higher than what Infoma came out with almost 120 or 121. And then I think FC Stone was 124, 125 or something like that. So I do think USA will come down to the 130 mark, maybe 129. I don't look for them to come down to the low 20s. And I do look for them to tweak harvested area. That might come down to 2 to 2.5 million. And the reason I say that, they normally don't do that in August. Normally, harvested acres are tweaked in October. But when you look back in years of 93, when we had the extreme flood situation in the Western Corn Belt, and in 83, they did tweak the harvested acres on the August report. So my guess is that we are going to see some tweaking of harvested acres, but I think they're going to leave themselves some room to tweak the acres further and to maybe alter the yields, because that's a real key. You don't want to come down too quick and then you have to come around and raise it back up again. In 83, that's what they had to do. They tweaked it down too much, and then I think the January final, they had to come back and raise the crop bigger. By then, though, we were already into a bear market. Soybeans, the panel has already mentioned, there's still maybe some room to add some bushels if we would get a good rain in the Corn Belt, but that's getting skinnier and skinnier by the day. But I don't think they'll come down as much as the other two private companies, but they're going to have to recognize the fact that this is a historic drought. And when you have the Corn Belt with several 105-degree type days rather than just one or two, it's going to do some crop damage.
Chip, if a producer has not made any new crop sales because they are unsure of what they have in the field, and that's understandable, what should they do to protect themselves in this marketplace?
Well, one thing also to keep in mind is crop insurance. And if you look at where that spring price was versus where we're at here currently, with APHs where they're at, especially with that trend adjustment, you could be looking at much as close to $400 an acre difference. We've been watching very closely and starting to buy some puts and lock in that crop insurance fall price. You can do that via puts, put spreads, something like that. You can lock in a fall price now because there's a long time between now and the average of October when we set that final fall price. Likewise, as producers are out there, if you haven't sold anything at all, it's probably time to be walking fields. You can get a better feel, not an exact feel, for where those yields are. And here, $8 and above probably makes some sense to sell a little bit, at least, of what you think you'll have if you have nothing on the books right now. I'm a little concerned in the short run that we're getting a little complacent. Everybody knows the damage and the problems of the drought, but it's starting to be a little bit of an old story. And when that happens, a lot of times you can see some extreme volatility. There's some gaps in the chart underneath us down towards 675, 680 D's corn. I'm not saying we're going there, but extreme volatility would not shock me.
Greg, what about for the producer that does not have crop insurance? And let's be honest, there are many that do not.
Well, I hopefully most people do. I think the number is somewhere around 80%. So for the people that don't have crop insurance, they really have to know what they've got out in the field because, when they sell what little bit they have, that's all they're going to get. They're not going to get any supplement from the crop insurance people. So, now we're trying to outguess the government. When do they step in and waive the ethanol mandate? Or do some other thing to try to curtail demand. So based on the supply, it sure feels like prices should go higher, but you don't want to be the last one out the door when this thing turns around.
Let me stay with you, Greg, and take us through the business implications of the drought on commercial storage facilities.
It's going to be a lean year for elevators. There's only going to be a half a crop out there for the most part. Basis levels are already strong. They're trying to encourage farmers to move grain in the fall. We've got sales that we need to cover, and basically bin storage isn't going to be worth very much under these kind of supply and demand scenarios. So Basis levels are over the board, and there's very little carry in the market, if any. In fact, in the bean market, there's big inverses. They want the beans sooner rather than later, and they want the corn sooner rather than later. So it's going to be a lean year for elevators. There's no carry, and that's how elevators make their money. But, there's been a lot of good years, so we're just going to have to muddle through this year and hope for better times next year.
Dan, very quickly, what else do we need to keep an eye on? 30 seconds.
Well, I think most of the farmers ought to fire their market advisors. Most of them had them sold, 50% or sold down here below the $6 futures mark. And, now they got a half a crop, so they got the crop sold at the lower level. Some of these companies that offer these accumulator contracts where you sell two calls and you get doubled up, I understand. There's a big grain conglomerate in Illinois that's got a whole bunch of those, and farmers don't have any crop at all. So okay. I guess the lawyers are going to be busy this winter collecting on those cash contracts that they talked to me into selling.
I'll be back in 2 minutes with Al Kleiss, president and manager of Kleiss Commodities in Wayzata, Minnesota.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. This July was the second warmest and the fourth driest on record. Based on preliminary data for the month, the statewide average temperature was 81.8 degrees. That's 6.4 degrees above normal. Statewide average precipitation was 1.5 inches. That's 2.6 inches below normal, or about a third of what we normally get in July. This year so far is the warmest and third driest on record. The statewide average temperatures for January through July was 56.9 degrees. That's 5.5 degrees above normal. The statewide average precipitation for January through July was 14.1 inches. That's 9.8 inches below normal. That total is now lower than 1988, when the statewide number was 14.6 inches, a half an inch wetter. The forecast from the National Weather Service shows a possibility of up to an inch of rain across Illinois over the next 5 days, especially in the south. Temperatures are expected to be near normal. The 6 to 10 day and 8 to 14 day forecast shows Illinois being at an increased risk for below normal rainfall. The western half of the state has a higher risk of above normal temperatures as well. The statewide outlook for the entire month of August shows an increased chance of both above normal temperatures and below normal precipitation. So it looks like the hot, dry weather will continue. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
You're listening to Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey. Our panelists today are Chip Nellinger, Greg Johnson, and Dan Zwicker. Joining us today by telephone is Al Kleiss, president and managing partner of Kleiss Commodities in Wayzata, Minnesota. He has written in the past for Corn and Soybean Digest and currently writes a column called Your Profit for Successful Farming magazine. Thanks for being with us today, Al.
Thanks for the call, Dave. I'm glad to be here.
I know we have been focusing a lot in the first half of the show on the 12-13 crop and the marketing of it. When do we start looking at 13-14 marketing strategies?
13, I'm interested in doing a little bit in here. We've recommended a couple of new crop hedges, 10% of the insured bushels on both the corn and soybeans. 2014, you've got a really steep discount on the futures out in 2014, and there's really no practical way to go in and lock in inputs that far out in advance. So I've never believed in the multi-year selling strategies. In the last couple of years, that has cost farmers a fortune, and I'm just going to stay very disciplined. And for a lot of folks that are able to buy their fertilizer, if they've got cash rents locked in or if they've got land that they own or a long-term contract, 640 December 13 corn, not a bad place to start. $13 November 13 beans, start, but go slow and kind of stay disciplined. I think we can have a pretty exciting new crop market there next spring and summer, even if we go lower later this fall.
Questions for Al? Chip.
Al, we've been focused a lot about this drought here in the middle part of the Corn Belt. You guys have been getting some better rains up there, but I know it's been hot as well. What do you feel crop potential is out of Minnesota and the Dakotas? Are we going to hold together up there, or is the heat pulling us backwards fast?
Two answers. Corn has really been hurt significantly, Chip. We've seen a lot of reductions in the yield. It looks good from the road, but when you get out in the middle of the field, there's a lot of the ears that are smaller or not formed at all. And so we've taken, I think, 20 or 30 bushels off of the corn crop in the last couple of weeks. This week we did get a nice rain, anywhere from an inch to 2 inches. Probably 80% of the state of Minnesota got covered, a good chunk of South Dakota, and that's going to really help the soybeans. We would still have hope for a lot of 40, possibly 50 bushel soybeans. They've hung in there amazingly well.
Greg?
Hey, Al, what do you think the government can do or will do to try to curtail this price increase if it keeps going on up?
Well, it's an election year. I don't see them messing with the fuel mandate. There's been a lot of requests by it from some of the feed company executives and some of the others, but I don't think that's the market itself. Ethanol production is slowing down, and I think it will. We're seeing here we can't give feeder pigs away. Sow slaughter is picking up, so the feed consumption is going to be dropping dramatically. Barley prices have really jumped substantially in the last couple of weeks as people look at other alternative supplies. So I think the market is doing its job on corn. For soybeans, we're not hearing a lot of negative publicity about the drought impact on soybean prices, because quite often consumers aren't aware of how it impacts them.
Dan?
Yeah, Al, you're an old chartist from many years ago. As you look at these long-term corn and soybean charts, what are you looking at for upside price objectives?
Well, the gaps that you indicated, I had one of the lowest objective I had was 820 in December corn. We poked up there briefly earlier in the week. I have another, the big midway gap objective would be 850 on the December corn contract, and nearby beans would project up to about 1850. So those are some of the next upside targets we'll have. And we'll need to see a bullish USDA report or something new come in, because I think the current decline in crop ratings and reduction in price is pretty well factored in, pretty much baked in the cake at this time.
Chip?
Al, what do you think on wheat here? I know there's some issues worldwide in Russia and starting to get a little dry in Australia, but how about wheat from a competitive feed grain standpoint? Is it going to be able to fit into the rations and help us cushion some of the lack of supply in corn?
Not right now. I mean, you've got wheat prices, looking at the Chicago wheat futures, significantly higher than what you have. And you talk about 80-cent, 90-cent bushel difference. Most people will not be feeding wheat. Some of the areas where you have a wider basis or lower protein wheat, it might work its way in. But I think the wheat's job right now is to keep high enough to where it does not work its way into the feed ration.
In fact, Al, could not wheat be the leader to the upside pulling corn?
It could be. You could kind of see a reversal on that. I do think globally we have a shortage of wheat that's temporary. I think by next year the wheat probably fundamentals will be the ones that change the fastest. And I think that if you are looking to get aggressive in selling anything ahead for 2013, I'm more interested in forward selling wheat than it would be in forward selling corn, and really not that interested in doing very many soybeans yet.
Greg?
The good news with all the talk about the drought the last 5 weeks or so is that we haven't had to talk about Europe and the outside markets. But at some point in time, do you see us getting back to worrying about Europe, or are they just going to, in your opinion, keep on refinancing Greece and the other countries and kicking the can down the road and letting somebody else solve the problem a year or two down the road?
You look back in the history of when we've had the European problems pop up, and usually in August it's had a history of getting pretty ugly, and quite often it happens over a weekend. There's a lot of optimism today with some of the announcements that were made. The euro is very strong. U.S. and European stock markets are very strong. They make the announcements with no details, and then over the weekend it seems like when the details are released, then you start saying, hey, that isn't going to work. And then also, they're really never sure who's going to pay for some of the proposed changes that are in there. So, unfortunately, it's been on hold the last 3 or 4 weeks. A lot of Europe takes the month of August off, but I'd say there's probably one chance in three that we could get some really bad news out of Europe yet this month, and that would carry over and could impact commodity prices as well.
Dan?
Al, how do you see the U.S. economy impacting commodity prices?
Well, so far we seem to be pretty resilient. Unemployment is staying high, and today's report was kind of mixed with more jobs being created than had been expected, but the unemployment rate going up. And so far, the American businesses are profitable. The people that have work are seeing their incomes go quite a ways further. Interest rates are down. Home mortgage costs are down. So the U.S. actually probably has got the strength to help pull the rest of the world out of this. And the U.S. economy, I think, will be challenged with higher food prices probably sometime later next year. But overall, for the people that are employed, it's a pretty good situation right now.
Chip.
Al, kind of circling back here, you mentioned about some 13 sales. Talking about the economy, talking about maybe some demand destruction here, do you ever see a case where kind of the perfect storm brews up and we've got a world economic slowdown at the same time we just kill demand and just kind of have a vacuum underneath us here?
You could. I mean, we look at what happened in 2008 when we went through the financial crash, and that put a lot of pressure on all of the grain markets and stock market. Everything went down in tandem together. I think that it's going to be more of a trading channel up here for a while. If you have 98 or 100 million acres of corn next year, you kill off a big chunk of the hog herd, you get large crops out of South America. By the fall of 2013, the corn market especially could be a lot lower than where it is today. But I think we'll have chip opportunities to sell new crop corn before that time.
Greg?
Al, we've mentioned the soybean market is technically friendly and possibly fundamentally friendly if we don't start getting rain soon. But yet the funds are extremely long. They own a big chunk of beans on paper, and at some point in time they're going to want to take profits. Given all that, where should a farmer be percentage-wise sold on this 2012 bean crop?
Based on your insured bushels, I would be comfortable having people about half sold right now, and I would have additional protection looking at some puts or put spreads below the market. That it can get a lot lower, you know, by probably this fall of 2013, but we're in a fundamental situation on beans that unless South America has a big increase in acreage and record crop yields, it's going to take a long time to fix the soybean shortage we have in the world right now.
Al, thanks for being with us today.
Glad to be here.
That's Al Kleiss, President and Managing Partner of Kleiss Commodities in Wayzata, Minnesota. And now a chance for a quick final word from our panelist, Chip Nellinger.
Well, I'd say despite all the bullishness and obvious fact that yields are dropping, as a producer, don't get your bullhorns too big here that you can't fit through the door. It doesn't mean don't do anything. There's things to do to protect crop insurance, things to do to sell what crop you have in the field.
Greg Johnson.
I agree. A lot of the bullish news has been factored into the corn market, but I still think there's one more leg up in this bean market, and that should allow corn to rally as well.
Dan Zwicker?
Just take one day at a time. We might get ourselves into short crops, keep getting shorter before the season's out.
We would like to thank our panel, Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing in Morton, Illinois, and Greg Johnson of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. And that is today's Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.